Thank you for downloading this podcast of The Y Factor. I'm David Baker, and I've always been interested in noise. I've always lived in cities, and all around us you get the clatter and clangs of city life. But I'm beginning to wonder recently what effect all this noise is having on us. So I wanted to look for this edition of The Y Factor at what noise really is, how it's affecting us as humans, and what we can do to stop it harming us so much. Enjoy the programme. Every day, our ears are assaulted by all sorts of sound.
We can travel information.
If we could, we'd wish it away. But unless things are really bad for a very long period, we tend to put up with it. This is the BBC World Service. I'm David Baker. And in this edition of The Y Factor, I'm getting to grips with noise. I said, if you can hear me, noise. I'm getting to grips with noise. What it is, why we put up with it, and the impact it often has on us without us even realising. For many people, sounds can literally cause pain.
I am moderately deaf with neurosensorial hearing loss.
Gabby Leon is an actor based in London.
Therefore, there are certain noise in this very loud city that can cause a lot of uncomfortable pain and almost a sensitivity to sound, because I suffer with a condition called hyperacusis, which is an excessive sensitivity to, like, mundane everyday noises.
For Gabby, sounds that most of us don't notice can be overwhelming. We're talking outside an underground station in central London, in one of the busiest parts of the city, as tourists and Londoners mingle at lunchtime. And those high-pitched sounds you can hear are the station's ticket gates opening and closing.
Every time there's a beep, there's a slight pressure in my ears and it's quite uncomfortable to hear. Similar to a microphone feedback, people don't like that noise, so they sort of wince at it. It's that same sort of reaction internally in my eardrum.
And this is happening every time there's a beep?
Yeah, every time there's a beep, other noises could be clapping, plates clanging together, kisses on the cheeks if they're too aggressive, doors slamming. Lots of, like, mundane noises that people wouldn't think would cause an issue actually are quite difficult for me. That's annoying.
This little trolley cart coming past.
There's a trolley cart.
He's just dropped his box. He heard you, I think.
Oh, dear, yeah, no. Stop moving!
He's going to go off again. Here we go.
That rattling is causing, like, a pressure in my right ear, which is my worst ear, and it feels like my brain's being squished a little bit due to the sound. It's a big mess, really.
I found this huge community of people who were really bothered by noise but felt like their voices weren't being heard.
Erica Walker researches the impact of noise on people living in her home city of Boston in the US.
It could be the loudness to one person. It could be the way it feels to another person. It could be the duration to another person. For me, I'm very sensitive to low-frequency sounds. So when I would complain and the police would come out and they would be like, it's not that loud. That's like, that's not the issue. Frequency is basically the character of the sound, so it's how it feels. So, for example, a lower frequency sound would be like thunder or like bass drums, has like a rumbling feeling, whereas a higher frequency has more of like a whistling feeling. So I wanted to see the distribution of these frequencies within the city, because low frequency noise is a particular botheration because it travels long distances and it's hard to abate. So I did find in areas with high volumes of transportation and industrial land use, there's a high volume of low-frequency sound.
What effect do you think that has on us, on our health?
Over a period of time, you get the hardening of your arteries. You know, this repeated stress response can just create wear and tear on your body. And then you begin to see the manifestation of cardiovascular disorders like hypertension, maybe even myocardial infarction. And then from a mental point of view, you know, those are the more of the cardiovascular and stress responses. But then your mental health can decline, especially if you don't feel like you have control over your environment.
I think noise is a very difficult thing to pin down, precisely because it means so many different things to so many different people.
Dr. Toby Hayes is the head of media research at Manchester Metropolitan University.
What is noise to some people is music to others. I think you'll always be able to find somebody somewhere who will find a noise that everybody else finds annoying, and for some reason they'll find something of it that causes comfort. Most people might consider a pickup truck at 6 o'clock in the morning rumbling past your apartment as being something that is annoying and couldn't constitute in any way, shape or form something that would be comforting or useful. However, they're kind of cultural anchors. They're part of their soundscape, and the regular soundscape is comforting.
But it's when you disrupt that regular soundscape that sound can be disturbing. Toby Hayes has studied how sound can be used as a weapon by law enforcement agencies. One example occurred in 1989, when US troops used sound against the Panamanian leader, General Manuel Noriega. Facing a US indictment for drug trafficking, he'd holed himself up in the Vatican's embassy in Panama's capital city after the US had invaded. And this is what he then had to endure.
He considered US music total noise, and he had a hatred of rock music because of its associations with chaos and, I would imagine, Western culture. So for him, rock music constituted utter noise.
In the end, songs like Panama, yes, it really was called that, by the US heavy metal band Van Halen, seemed to be too much for Noriega, and he surrendered. Since then, though, technology has moved on. So-called long-range acoustic devices, huge speakers mounted on top of armoured cars, are now the sound weapon of choice for law enforcement agencies around the world. And, says Toby Hayes, they're much more insidious than other weapons because we can't see the effect they have.
It's brutal, obviously. I mean, tinnitus has been caused by these things, or bleeding noses and bleeding ears and perforated eardrums. You don't have the scopic or visual proof of any type of attack in the way that a police force might use batons, or they might use physicality or rubber bullets. You can see the outcome of that. You can see the outcome on when the TV cameras are on that type of activity. Using sound is very difficult to actually visualise what that is. Sound is often difficult for people to comprehend how physical and violent that can be.
So if sound, from wheelie suitcases to Van Halen, can be so harmful, is it possible to do something about it? Robin Stewart has autism, which means, like Gabby, sounds can sometimes overwhelm her.
I almost always carry headphones or earbuds with me, and I have them plugged into my iPhone. I like things that have plenty of drums in. I'd go for something like Led Zeppelin because they have lots of bass and lots of drums and guitars, because I find that there are certain spaces where the quality of the sounds around me alters. So like tube tunnels, to me, they seem like they amplify sound. I have to be careful to balance the amount of stimulation that I get through my senses, because if I'm, like, really stressed, that turns the volume up of my senses, and that means I could get overwhelmed. What it feels like to me is a bit like standing on a beach and then a massive wave, like a 10-foot wave, comes over you and you're not in control anymore. The wave just sort of takes you over, and because it's so big and you're so small, then you can't swim your way out of it. There's nothing you can do. You're going to drown.
And Gabby also has ways of dealing with unwanted noise.
You can't hide from sound in the world. That's just impossible. You cut yourself off, and that's no way to live, really. So I have lots of different strategies to help me. That might be things like playing pink noise.
Tell us more about pink noise.
So
what's
it's
that?
Similar to white noise, quite a harsh sounding frequency, but pink noise, it's softer on the eardrum, and it's basically like a hum. It's just a set of frequencies that are sort of soothing to the eardrum and the brain, which will help me be less aware of the sensitivity to the noise, if that makes sense.
Almost like a sound cocoon around you.
Yeah, literally. And I call it like the brain game. So you've got to try and convince your brain that the sound's okay and it won't be there forever. Ears are so, so delicate, and I feel like we as humans don't look after them correctly. And we don't know how much damage we're doing in our daily lives just by even being in busy environments.
So far, we've heard from people who've been affected negatively by sounds. But sometimes even loud noise can feel good, can give us a sense of belonging.
Hearing sounds creates a sense of community. So I did also find that in my study that, you know, some people were like, these neighborhood barbecues and block parties drive me crazy. And then you have a facet of people who say, well, this feels like a sense of community to me. I don't feel like it's my community if I don't hear my neighbors arguing outside. But that's the importance of, you know, separating what is sound and what is noise.
A good example of what you might call communal noise are the matatus in Kenya. Brightly coloured buses that ferry people to and from work and which are famous for the loud music they play inside. It's almost like a mobile party, which everyone's been invited to. As Michael Koloki explained to me from inside one of them driving along the streets of Nairobi.
Matatus are famous for music. They're known to play loud music. And a lot of times it seems that when one enters a matatu, sometimes you can barely hear yourself or hear others as well.
The music in a matatu is kind of like it's a communal experience for everyone. You know, everyone has to enjoy the music, has to join in. And that feels quite different from, for example, where I live in London, where everyone on their way to work just sort of plugs into their earphones and listens to their own music. Does that make a sense of community when people travel together there in Nairobi?
Well, you know, this noise is definitely a communal experience here for everyone partaking, I guess. You know, sometimes you find some people here who prefer to plug in their earphones and listen to music or talk on the phone. You know, sort of what I'm doing now, because I tell you, I don't think I'd be able to hear you without my headphones, but this experience perhaps has become part and parcel of the communal experience one goes through if you live in Nairobi. Maybe I would describe it more like a moving street. You have almost all the elements on the street here. The music, the hawker, the street preacher, the street lights. Some matatus, for example, this one, have a light system inside. So it's sort of like the experience that is traveling with a part of Nairobi through the streets of Nairobi.
And a few years ago, the government tried to ban the loud music on matatus. Is that right? Why did they do that?
Well, yes, there was a move to ban loud music on matatus a number of years ago. The ban was based on a number of concerns, I think. One about the disturbance caused by the music, that is on businesses and also on pedestrians. The other was its general contribution to increased noise pollution. And there was actually a move to try and regulate decibel levels, that is the sound levels of the music. But it seems that that really didn't work, really.
The ban was lifted, I think. Is that right?
I would say more or less the ban was relaxed, perhaps because enforcement was proving a bit tricky. Now, as to whether it was lifted, perhaps it is many a times when one is in a matatu and as you approach a police officer, the driver turns down the music. It's really interesting, you know, like on the route I usually use, on some days the drivers turn down the music as they approach police officers, on other days they don't. So it's a bit unclear, I have to say. On certain days it seems the ban is on, and on other days it seems that, you know, it's not on.
The government was behind the ban, but were there people behind the ban as well? Did passengers complain about the loud music?
Some passengers complain. Others actually ask the driver or the conductor to turn it up a little bit louder so they can hear it more. So I think it depends on the people. Some prefer the loud music and others don't. I know, for example, that there's some people who will wait for the older type of matatus that don't have music. They will spend a long period at the matatu stop waiting for that particular matatu just so that they can travel without the music on.
What would happen if you were in one of the loud matatus and you actually asked for the music to be made quieter or turned off?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you there. It's a bit loud in here.
What would happen if you were a passenger in one of the loud matatus and you actually asked for the music to be turned down or turned off if it was too loud for you?
Well, more or less lately, I do find that matatus crews are more willing to cooperate and turn down the music. For example, if one is taking a call, phone call, and, you know, wants to speak, they you know, more or less would oblige.
In London, they've managed to turn down the volume of the daily commute in a different way. This is what a London Underground station normally sounds like. But listen to this. This is Westminster Station. one of a number on the London Underground system that have been designed to be quieter.
I'm Peter Henson. I'm a partner with Bickerdike Allen Partners, and I'm an acoustic consultant.
Why have you brought us here?
Well, I wanted to demonstrate acoustics in action. We have a concrete ceiling, and we have some concrete walls, and we have big cylindrical features which are like big tubes, which are an architectural feature, really. Which,
absolutely, it feels very industrial.
It feels
here,
very industrial.
It feels like a big factory, really.
Absolutely right. And in keeping with that, on this curved wall, which can be notoriously bad for acoustics, we have these grey perforated acoustic panels from floor to ceiling, and behind the perforations will be acoustic foam, which absorbs the sound. And we have a steel floor, so as you walk in here, you expect, your mind tells you it's going to be a very reverberant space. But you have this warm acoustic here.
Yes. And actually the whole of that wall is lots of panels with tiny little perforations in them, sort of grid of perforations. And you're saying behind that is foam. What's that doing in the physics?
As we talk and our voice hits that wall, the sound energy is absorbed by that foam, and there's no rebound, there's no reflected sound coming back. Whereas with a concrete ceiling and a steel floor, the energy from our voices will bounce back and bounce up. Then we would have a very reverberant environment with the sound bouncing all over the place, more like we're accustomed to when we walk into a standard underground station.
No, it certainly feels very cocoon-like here, actually. Often on the London Underground, you can barely speak to your neighbour or ask directions or whatever. Yeah. The noise is quite massive here, actually. Yes. It's that sort of place you might want to relax and read a book. And certainly we're speaking just a very ordinary volume here. We're not shouting at each other at all.
Yeah, we've got about 30, 40 people within 20 metres of us.
Right. I mean, constantly people are walking past us. They're going up and down the escalators here. There's 6 escalators, I think, we can see. I mean, this is a very busy station.
It is.
And yet we're having, almost as if we're sitting in our living room having a conversation. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, it is.
Most of us have little choice but to travel to work on public transport, whether that's by Matatu or on the underground. But when we go out to a bar or restaurant, that's different. Or is it?
So when I go drinking, like, to bars with my friends and stuff, in there you've got people talking at one level, trying to talk over the music that's playing stupidly loud anyway, and that a situation like that is really, really difficult for me, in which I usually take my hearing aids out if it's too much, or I put my earplugs in, which again, like, that isolates me from a social situation. And I feel like there needs to be an understanding that big loud noise isn't always great for atmosphere. Like, you can create atmosphere in different ways using like scent. And imagine if bars like smell of vanilla, I don't know, like something just a bit different. Doesn't always have to be, you know, this loud raucous noise.
There's a growing body of research now showing both that it causes kind of irritation and maybe lowers our mood as we can't make ourselves understood to whoever we're speaking to, through to the kind of growing number of complaints around restaurants where the noise levels are being recorded at over 100 decibels.
Charles Spence is a professor of experimental psychology at Oxford University. He studied the impact sound has on us when we eat and drink.
As the beats per minute goes up, the rate at which we bring the fork to our lips, our mouth, the rate at which we bring our glasses up to our lips, again, increases, not to the same speed as the music, but kind of entrained to some degree by the ambient kind of soundscape. And all of this goes on without us kind of really realising what impact the music or the noise is having on us.
And I guess for many people, something like, you know, it's a rather nice late-night dinner jazz in your favourite bistro would calm you down and make you eat more slowly and enjoy your food more slowly.
I am seeing a growing number of the larger kind of food chains who are now systematically varying the tempo of the music that they play, that they beam out to their stores, to their shops, to their cafes around the world, speeding things up at busy times of day, kind of increase their footfall and people moving in and out to make space for others, and then slowing down the music at quieter times of day in order to try and keep a few people hanging around and give the place a bit of atmosphere. If you play Italian music while eating a bit of pasta or lasagna, you will rate that food as tasting more authentic than if you had some other kind of music in the background. Put on a bit of classical music, and again, you will rate the wine that you're tasting as probably higher in quality. So what you think about the music is being kind of transferred to what you think about the food and the dining environment.
And restaurants are also waking up to the idea that too much noise is deterring customers.
What they're doing is offering either clever sound damping materials or screens to be attached to the ceiling or in other locations to help manage the reflections of the sound that's been created. And in other places, we see some very clever kind of active systems where there may be microphones in different parts of the restaurant, and they'll pick up the noise levels and kind of adjust how loud different speakers in different parts of the restaurant play the music in order to try and keep an acceptable level no matter where you are.
Of course, not everyone is as interested in reducing noise as restaurants. And there are plenty of restaurants where the sound is pretty deafening. Let's face it, it probably comes down to how much you can afford.
Would it be fair to say that in city life, wealth buys you peace and quiet?
I think that's changing. At least in Boston, it used to be that the wealthier people lived in the suburbs and the poor people lived in the city. And the cities are a little louder and the suburbs are a little quieter. But now we're seeing an influx of wealthier people back into the city because there's these high-rise condos that are $2 million. I think that they're going to complain and they're going to be heard. And we're seeing that now. Like, there's a community in Boston called East Boston. It's right next to Logan International Airport. And they've been complaining about the sound levels for years. But there's also another community called Milton, and it's a wealthier community. And some of the planes have been redirected to fly over this community, and they are raising Cain. And so it's just like, it'll be interesting to see what kind of response they will get versus what kind of response the people in East Boston have been getting over many years.
So where does this all take us? It's clear that sounds, from bars to stations to scaffolding to lorries, can harm us in so many ways, even when we don't notice them. And according to Erica Walker, that's something we need to become more conscious of.
Once we raise some sort of awareness for noise in our communities, then we could begin to regulate what's necessary and what's not necessary.
I'm David Baker, and you've been listening to The Why Factor. The producer was Bob Howard. You can listen again to this program on the website and hear other Why Factors on silence, musical harmony, and clapping. And we'd love to hear your ideas for future topics. Email us at yfactor@bbc.com. We'll leave the final word on noise to Michael Koloki as he continues his journey in that microcosm of sound in Nairobi, the Matatu.
Do you like the noise of the city, or do you every so often have to escape from it?
You know, sometimes it gets a bit too much. But generally, what I would say is, for example, where I live, if I don't wake up to the sound of the newspaper vendor across the road yelling, it feels a bit strange to me. At times, it does get a bit too much. And when it does, I tend to seek the serene environment of my rural village, where all you hear in the morning are birds all around you and oh yes, the cows. Out there are no matatus, no music, no shouting conductors, just birds and the moos of cows.